This is a Triple J podcast.
I am aware that at a certain point, a lot of my friends are probably going to like couple up, get married and have children, which is going to be something that's so different and disparate to what I will have.
Hello, my friends. Dee Salmon with you for the Hookup Podcast, where we talk all things love, sex, dating and relationships. And you know how our Thursday pods work. We either chat to an expert on a topic that we've been discussing on the Tuesday pod, or I introduce you to someone that I really think that you'd love to hear from. And I'm really excited to chat to someone today that I've been a fan of online for a couple of years now. Her name is Ali Daisy King. She is a writer and a content creator. She's a fashion girly, an asexual icon, and also the podcast host of Book Smart from Missing Perspectives. And not only does Ali have incredible style and fashion, is incredibly smart, especially when it comes to talking about books, but also she's very vocal on socials talking about her experience as someone who identifies as an asexual. And this is something we've spoken about a bit on the Hookup, but I think not enough. So I thought, what an incredible opportunity to invite her into the studio to chat to her today. Ali, thank you so much for coming on the Hookup.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here with you.
So yeah, like I said, I've been a huge fan, absolutely love everything that you post on socials, but also your work at Missing Perspectives, hosting the Book Smart podcast. Tell us about your journey of how you ended up there and working in this space.
It's actually very interesting because my journey is actually so intrinsically tied to my asexual identity, because I, in 2020, started posting just outfit pictures on Instagram because I was bored in lockdown and had nothing else and nothing better to do. And I wasn't wearing my actual clothes. So I was like, might as well take a photo a day of each of my outfits and post them online, see what happens. And I built up like a small following from that. And then I made friends with a bunch of other writer girlies in Melbourne, most notably like Jasmine Wallace and Maggie Zhao. And they became very dear friends of mine. And when Heartbreak High, the TV show, came out in 2022, I pitched an article to Refinery 29 Australia at the time about how that show made me feel confident and comfortable in saying that I was asexual. That was the first article I ever wrote in my entire life. And from there, the reception was really, really overwhelmingly positive. That was also my public coming out. So I kind of did monetize my coming out, I fear. And so then from there, I started my journey as a media girly, worked at Refinery 29 for about just under a year. And then I started working at Missing Perspectives pretty soon after that and started up the podcast Book Smart this past year with my best friend and co-host Sunny Adcock, who's just amazing to get
also
to work
incredible
with.
Yes,
an icon, a diva, and yeah, it's just been such a joy to get to work in like social and partnerships at Missing Perspectives.
We'll talk about that article in a sec about you know I guess like quote unquote publicly coming out, but where did your journey with discovering your asexuality start? Like, were there experiences before watching Heartbreak High that made you realize? Because I think for like, you know, in this heteronormative world, like a lot of people would watch like a movie and it's just like, oh, the guy's kissing the girl, and it's like, okay, so that's what I'm supposed to do. And you know, you just kind of maybe in like primary school like pass a note around the classroom and go like, hey, would you like to kiss, or like, you know what
it's
I mean,
competitive.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly. So pre Heartbreak High, were there any moments that you realized actually maybe I'm not into all of this?
I definitely, there were clearly very early indicators that I should have realized that something asexual was going on, because I do remember vividly in high school when I was in maybe year 10 or 11, one of my friends was describing giving a blowjob to her boyfriend, and I was like, ew, why would anyone want to do that? And then I was like, am I right, ladies? And everyone was like, there were crickets. Like, everyone was like, no, like, I kind of want to do that. And I was like, ugh, weirdos. And I wasn't ever a person who was like striving to date, striving for a first kiss. But I just thought like, oh, that's probably just like, you know, I'm not prude, I'm highly selective, like clueless. Or I was also just like, oh, like, I've got other things to worry about. I'm a theater kid. Like, I've got other shit that I've got other bigger fish to fry, I guess. But then when I was in lockdown in 2020, I went down on like a classic late night scroll sesh on YouTube one night, and I found this video from Chantel Houston from BuzzFeed's Ladylike, and she was talking about her experience being demisexual. And I had always, you know, been a very vocal queer advocate and ally without necessarily thinking I was part of the community. And I was like, oh my God, I should educate myself. I don't really know what this is. So I clicked on it. Little did I know that this video had changed my entire life. And then I spent the rest of the night doing such an intense, like, deep dive into asexuality, the different asexual identities. And I walked away from that in 2020 when I was about 21 years old, realizing who I was. Yeah.
How incredible.
Very intimidating moment. I was like, oh, That explains so much.
You're like, actually, this makes so much more sense.
Oh, yeah. I went to grab drinks a few weeks later, the first night out of lockdown with some friends. And I do remember telling them my discovery. And they all just started laughing. And they're like, that makes so much sense. I was like, yeah, I think the call was coming from inside the house.
I think that example that you gave of, yeah, people talking about giving blowjobs and being like, wait, what the fuck? Why are you, what, that sounds disgusting. Why do you want to do
like
this?
Like your knees would hurt, your mouth would hurt. It just doesn't sound very comfortable. You're not getting anything really out of it. I was just like, that just feels dumb.
Did you ever feel pressure like to participate? Because I know in high school, hookup culture in general, like I think that I wasn't really like that sexually interested in guys, but because I didn't go through puberty until I was like a bit older, but I think I just did it anyway because that was just what everyone was doing. Did you ever feel that pressure?
I think I started to maybe in like year 11 or so. I definitely beforehand dressed very similar to how I do now, like, you know, very girly and bright and, you know, has a certain element of like whimsy. That's always been who I am. But I did have this era where I think that because I've always had big boobs and they were always very hypersexualized, and I was always hearing from people, you've got such good boobs, why don't you wear them? Like, why don't you wear them? Why don't you, you know,
show
wear
them things off.
And show them off? Like, you know, show the girls. And I think because I, in my head, thought that this was something that I should be doing and I should be yearning for, that I almost sort of put myself to be hypersexualized in order to try to make myself feel normal. But it was such a subconscious thing. So in that era of like 2016, 17, there's so many photos of me online where I just have like the most low cut tops imaginable. My tits are like out and I'm just like, I look back and I'm like kind of mildly horrified by this and by this pressure that I didn't necessarily think I was feeling at the time. But now looking back, I'm like, I would have never have worn like a denim skirt and like a black cookie top in my lifetime. That's not something I would have ever strived to have done. But I was trying to be normal, I guess, and didn't necessarily realize that this was like a pressure inside of me.
Totally. And like the male gaze, right? It's like,
oh, yeah.
How are we supposed to, yeah, how do we even know? When you then realized during COVID and you like had the language and you're like, oh my God, I feel so seen and this makes so much sense. What was the journey over the next couple of years for you before you then wrote that article for Refinery?
I think at the start, I did tell people pretty quickly. Like I told my family, I told my closest friends as much as I could because we were in a lockdown. But I was, you know, decently open about it. It wasn't ever a secret, but I wasn't, you know, shouting it from the rooftops and like writing articles about it. It wasn't like what it is now, where it's such an integral part of my identity. But I did have people in my life who said that like asexuality didn't exist. I definitely did have some pushback, which then did make me maybe feel a bit ashamed, or not even ashamed, just made me feel like I shouldn't be talking about it as openly. And I really did have to, you know, it was a very brave thing to post online. I now look back, you know, I think I probably had about like, you know, 10, 12K at the time to post online being like, hey everyone, you normally see me post fashion stuff, but here I'm actually wrote an article about being asexual. By the way, happy Asexuality Awareness Week. Actually, the timing was very brilliant, accidentally. It coincided very well. But yeah, it wasn't very comfortable to talk about for many years, and I didn't have the best interactions, or people just didn't know. That was honestly most of it. People just were so
unaware, right?
Unaware. I did have people think that I was talking about being pansexual. They were mistaking asexual for pan and stuff like that. There were a few funny occurrences about that. But at the end of the day, a lot of people have, you know, educated themselves so much in those years. And I'm really grateful because it's not something that any of us knew about. I wasn't an expert when I came out.
100%. And like, I didn't until I started working on the show. Like, it is one of those things that we don't have a lot of representation on, which is, we'll talk about that. I really want to talk about why it's so important. But I think Heart Bright High is just such a beautiful example of
landmark
that, right?
Example.
With Cash. Sure. And then, so when you wrote this article, what was the reception like coming online? Like you said, normally posting about fashion and then, you know, being quite vulnerable with this.
It changed my world completely. It changed my life in ways that I don't think I will ever truly be able to articulate. I got to have a really long form interview with Will McDonald, who plays Cash, earlier this year ahead of season 3 coming out. And I actually revealed to him, I was like, we've spoken, you know, many times at events and whatnot before, because we're like, you know, we're friendly, because he's read my stuff and whatnot. And I did share with him. I was like, I hope you are aware that this is actually my first article. And he was so shocked by that. And I'm like, I owe my full career and my life, this beautiful, rich world I have now, I fully owe to him and that team behind the show. And I had the writers, the creators all reaching out to me and sharing their love and support after that first piece. And every single comment on that was positive. There were, you know, God, so many comments. There were tens and tens, like there were probably hundreds of comments, and every single one was people sharing love. And to this day, it is like still overwhelmingly positive, which was really great to be met with such love, which I don't think I was expecting. I don't think I expected it to be as big as it was, because the forward count on Instagram for it was pretty funny. I was like, oh, a couple hundred really people sending it.
Really Ooh. Telling, isn't it?
I'm like, oh yeah, people who knew me in a past life are probably like, that makes so much
sense. They're sending it to the group chat being like, this makes sense.
That tracks.
We have spoken about asexuality on the Hookup before and spoken about how it is, you know, a bit of a spectrum. Mm. There's great ace, there's aromantic, there's obviously asexual, and you can be on that spectrum. Mm. You might be aromantic.
Yeah. Which is like a whole new spectrum, a whole other spectrum. Yeah,
totally. What does your sexuality look like for you?
I consider myself to be on the asexual spectrum. I think initially I felt like I was demi, because I have at one point in my life felt like romantic attraction, and I did, and I was like, oh no, I felt sexual attraction. And then when I look back, I'm like, I've kissed one person before, and I look back and I'm like, oh no, I definitely like, I was kissing this person and I was thinking about other things. And when I look back on it, I would be like, oh my God, that was so fun. That was so nice. But it was never in the moment. I didn't feel attraction or joy or anything in that moment. I felt just kind of numb. It wasn't disgusting. It wasn't like, I'm going to throw up, I'm going to kill myself. But it also wasn't sparks and butterflies, which was what I got when I was talking to this person. So I think that was a real indicator to me that I am asexual but not aromantic, because I can experience romantic attraction, but the physical attraction is just not there. But I always say that, you know, it's a spectrum. I never want to fully give myself an exact label of where I could fall, because I think that accounts for life that I haven't lived and experiences that have not, you know, come on my path yet.
Yeah. What would you say to someone listening who maybe is hearing about asexuality for the first time and doesn't really understand it? Like, what have you heard from the community about what it can look like?
I mean, I know people who are asexual who have partners who they do have sex with, and you know, it's not necessarily something that they derive that much sexual pleasure from, but they are like, oh, it's kind of akin to like, oh, if he wants me to go to the pub with him to watch a footy game, or he'll come to like, you know, he'll come to like go shopping with me. It's just like a small act of service. And because they aren't sex repulsed, well, this person in particular, some people are, but like this person in particular is not sex repulsed. So they're like, you know, it's no skin off my back. It gives them pleasure. And it doesn't really mean anything to me. It's not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a neutral, which is honestly very accurate. But then I know other people who are demisexual who do feel sexual attraction, who do go on dates. But then I also know people who are aromantic asexual who are actively seeking a life partner, because they do want a companion for their life. It's just not going to be romantic or sexual in nature. It really can look different for every single person, because asexuality and aromanticism are, you know, are different facets, and it's almost like a two-pronged thing.
Totally. And I'm keen to chat about being single and friendship and the importance of like platonic love, right? It's like this idea that, yeah, you might not ever experience romantic attraction, but you can still have great love, right?
Oh, like, yes.
And you can have that with friends, and you might want a lifelong partner that doesn't necessarily mean like a partner that you are like sexually aroused by or attracted to. We know that for some people as well, like sex doesn't have to necessarily mean something that like is come from arousal or like attraction, right? It can be something that is just a blow of steam. Have you heard that as well from people
as
well?
Yes, like, I do know a lot of asexual people who masturbate because they just view it as like a completely non-sexual thing, because sexual attraction and libido are completely different things. Like, they are not linked in this way that everyone seems to think. And they often will get shocked when they hear that asexual people sometimes can masturbate. But it is quite literally, it's like, for a lot of them, the most non-sexual thing in the world, akin to like cracking knuckles. That's kind of what I've heard a lot. But I'm not a person who that doesn't bring me pleasure. That's not something I do. But I also, I'm not yucking other people's, not even yum, just yucking other people's.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, babe, do whatever.
Do whatever.
Yeah, do whatever.
I'm not gonna do it, but you know, I get it. Sometimes if someone wants to go to sleep and they need to just blow off some steam or get out of their head, an asexual baddie will just, you know, flick the bean a bit. And I'm like, yeah, sure, pop off.
I feel like that's a misconception that I hear quite a bit when it comes to asexuality. Are there any others that you can think of that you've gotten quite a bit that people just like have the wrong idea about?
Oh, a big one I get at the moment a lot, because we're in this big like book to screen adaptation sort of, you know, moment right now with Off Campus and Heated Rivalry, and people get really shocked when they hear that I love romance novels, and I love a smutty romance novel. And my most said thing to, you know, in response to when people will say to me, wow, but you're asexual, why do you want to read that, why do you want to listen to that, and I'll just be like, well, to me romance novels are sci-fi because they are so completely otherworldly to me. They are this complete and utter universe that I will never like understand, or I don't want to visit, but it's fun. It's fun to explore. And orgasms and cyborgs are equally far-fetched to me, but they're fun to read about.
It's like sci-fi. It's like...
Exactly. It's just otherworldly, and that's completely fine with me. It's really fun, but people always get really shocked and they're like, are you sure you're asexual? Because you've read all of the off-campus books like 15 times each and you've read Heated Rivalry before the show came out. And I'm like, yes, I just like reading about this world. It's fun. And also I love romance. I'm a romantic at the end of the day.
I love that so much. It's like, yeah, you can read these books and not get the fanny flutters and still enjoy them. Exactly. There's still like so much else happening in the book.
Agreed. And also I think that at the end of the day, fundamentally, smut actually develops characters really well. And I read books that are like asexual and have smut in them. Like Alison Cochrane's books is a really good example of asexual books that have smut in them, because a lot of her characters are demisexual.
That was one of my main questions I wanted to ask you as well, was like, yeah, what are you loving reading and watching at the moment? Because you and I... even before we clicked record, we're just like going on and on for ages about Off Campus.
Oh, yeah.
And the should. My Fault series as well. Yeah, what are you loving as someone who is a podcast host on Booksmart? What are you loving?
Well, I've just done the Windy City series, which is like a, you know, sports romance series, Liz Tom Forte, which was very fun because I know they're getting an adaptation and I like to be an expert. And I also just read a couple of Ali Hazelwood's books ahead of The Love Hypothesis coming out. And I was floored by the fact that most of her books have an asexual character in them, including like Olive, I believe her name is, from The Love Hypothesis. She's a demisexual character. She talks about how she never felt sexual attraction until Adam Carlson. And I'm like, okay, demisexual. And then the next book I read, they outwardly have a character who is asexual and struggling to tell their family about their identity. And I was just floored reading this. So I was like, oh, this baddie knows ball. She is either on the asexual spectrum or has a very close a-spec person in her life, because it is such an integral part of her stories, which I was really floored by.
It kind of goes to your point as well around Heartbreak High about representation, right? It's like, see, I had no idea that it was Cash that helped you realize, well, I guess the YouTube, but then to be able to like...
Be comfortable
saying, talking about it publicly. Mm. How important is ace representation?
It is everything. And it is also quite literally nothing, because there are like 30 TV show characters in history who are on the asexual spectrum, and even less film characters. My first video essay I did for YouTube about a year and a half ago was about how there are like, so I think the actual title was Why Asexual Representation in TV Show Sucks, or something along the lines of that. And that video was my first thing I posted to YouTube ever, and somehow it got like 120,000, 130,000 views.
Oh my god,
like
Ellie.
Yeah, it really popped up. I was very annoyed my channel wasn't monetized ahead of that. I was like, shit. I missed so much money from that. But it was a joy to put it out. And I said in that video about how just how important media representations of queerness, of ability, of race, anything are, because quite literally you can't be what you can't see, but also you need to be able to find these things out from somewhere. I feel like so many people became so much more educated about queerness in my generation, especially like, you know, from a gay angle, I would say from Glee, from a lesbian angle, Orange is the New Black. Media really shaped so many people's perception of queerness in our world. And I think I always get really scared when I realize that probably one of the most high profile representations of asexuality for older generations is an episode of House,
What like, happens?
Oh, House decides these people come in to see him and they both say they're an asexual couple. And he's like, no, that doesn't exist. That's only for fugly people. That's not a real thing. It's fake. They're either lying or like sickos. And it's this horrible episode. And he ends up proving that she was lying about being asexual and he actually had a disease that was suppressing his sex, his like libido and his sexual attraction, which... The whole episode is a dumpster fire and it ends up being proven like, oh yeah, asexuality isn't real. And that was initially premiered to something like 11 million people
on the first time it aired.
And that is what most people's kind of understanding of asexuality is that it's this thing that's like fake or made up and has irreparably harmed so many asexual people to this day. I have people in my comments almost every single day saying something along the lines of that episode has like shaped their family's view of asexuality and they can't come out, or at the time they did try to come out they said no, it's not real because House said it's not real. People learn stuff from media. People get so much of their education about so much of the world from media. Honestly, a lot of the times it is like very akin to being fake news because these things aren't regulated. It's storytelling, but at the end of the day, that's where people learn things. So I just think there needs to be so much better asexual representation in the world, especially asexual representation that isn't just like white guys. Like, I love you, yeah. Cash. I love you, Isaac. I love you guys down bad. But like, what would it take to get an asexual woman of color on screen that isn't O from sex education who ended up being the villain?
You're so right, because this is what shapes culture. And it's also what's shaped the world in which, in our Western world, that we think about the importance of relationships and love and marriage and like, you know, something that we've spoken about before is the fact that so many women in particular feel this like pressure to not be single and that something's wrong with you if you are or if you're on your own. And especially getting into your like late 20s and your 30s and it's like this, oh, poor you, like you're going to end up alone.
The spinster, the hag.
The spinster, the hag, like old the crazy cat lady, totally. How does it feel living in that world as someone who probably won't ever have that or doesn't want to have that?
It's not fun because I think at a certain point, like I am aware that there is almost like a ticking time bomb on a lot of my friendships, that at a certain point, a lot of my friends are probably going to like couple up, get married and have children. And they will be in a different phase of their lives, which is going to be something that's so different and disparate to what I will have, because you know, I might have children. I do probably want children, but I'm also like, girl, how am I going to be able to afford them on a media salary as a solo parent? And then also the concept of giving birth to a child, nothing's coming in or out of me as if. We'll have to figure all that out. Logistics. But I think I often get scared that there's like that my relationships almost have like an expiration date on them. And I know that Heartstopper in season two, I was really happy with how they handled the concept of having all of your friends couple up and the asexual person is just kind of left there with Isaac, who's our ace, just, you know, being very frustrated because he feels like he was always left out of things and that everyone else was making their life seem so much more important. They would always get top billing in conversation to talk about their romance lives because that's the thing that's prized above everything else. Because in our Western world and a lot of, honestly, most parts of the world, it's just that love conquers all and love is the most important thing on earth. Romantic love should be prized above all relationships. When that's just not something that I know, I'm just not interested in. And it does get a bit taxing when I'll be at dinner with friends and the whole night people are just talking about relationships and sex and I'm just sitting there bored out of my fucking skull half the time. Like half the time it's fun and I love a little gab, I love a gossip, I love hearing these stories. But when it's all we talk about, I do end up feeling like Miranda in Sex and the City.
Oh my God.
Like, how is it that such interesting, intelligent women have nothing to talk about but boyfriends? It's like seventh grade with bank accounts. That is that is the most accurate scene to me of all time, because I know that I, you know, do come across like her as rather judgmental at times. We've spoken about this. I definitely do judge my friends. I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. Of course this isn't going to work out. This guy's a toe. Like, of course not. But, you know.
Well, you just see it from a different perspective because you're like, why are you still, yeah, so unattached, but also you see the patterns that continuously happen.
Exactly.
And you just go like, why are we still dating this shitty guy that doesn't care about you, that we spent all of brunch talking about?
It's exhausting. And then like I will have sometimes, I've had this before in relationships where people turn around and be like, yeah, well, you don't understand relationships. You don't understand feelings because you're asexual. And I'm like, A, asexual, not aromantic, so I can understand romantic feelings and attraction, but also regardless, that doesn't fucking matter. I hear enough about this stuff from all of my fucking friends. I can have an opinion. If you're coming to me complaining, I'm allowed to have an opinion and allowed to, you know, express my thoughts. I'm not dumb. I shouldn't be treated as less than, or my opinion shouldn't be treated as, you know, less valid, or I shouldn't be treated like I have no emotions because I'm asexual. I'm not this cold, unfeeling person who doesn't understand relationships. I understand them very well. I actually think I understand them better than most because I am coming from a very detached angle. I'm separate from it.
And you're seeing it so much and you can see it from that perspective.
Exactly.
Well, I do want to talk about, like, yeah, the brilliance of being single and how incredible life can be, because this is a thing that you are so actively great at talking about and portraying online. It's like, I love your apartment. I love that you have such a beautiful aesthetic. I love, like, that your life is so full of so many hobbies and things that you know, are really interested in and pursue and do. Talk us through a little bit about, like, yeah, like, what your life looks like for people who might be listening and are like, oh, like, I've always had this idea that, like, yeah, the crazy cat lady sitting at home just like, well, what do you do if you're not having sex and on the apps and hooking up?
I have had people say to me before, God, how do you get everything done? Because they're like, you have such a busy calendar, you're working every day, you do so much, how do you get it all done? And I'm like, babe, it's asexual privilege. I don't have a partner waiting for me at home that demands my attention for X amount of hours, or someone that is like, oh, why aren't you hanging out with me? Why aren't you talking to me? I don't have that. I can just hang out by myself. I can do 100 hours a month of Audible. If I wasn't asexual, I would not be doing as much Audible, guys, which would just be so horrific to me. It's the love of my life. Honestly, that's my real one, true love. But even last week, I was shooting a spread of my house for the design files, which was a big dream come true. And one of the people who was at the shoot said, this is a sort of apartment that makes you want to break up with your boyfriend.
It actually is, though. That's such a great
girl apartment.
That is such a great description. That is a perfect description. It actually is. It's like the dream girl apartment that you think about when you're like, if I lived on my own, this is exactly what I would do.
I'm a person who lives so romantically. I will always have fresh cut flowers if I can, you know, in between my once, twice a month trips to Sydney. I will always try to have fresh cut tulips, preferably. I'm always baking something. I try to have, like, pretty candles or incense going so the place feels cozy. I live in so much abundance of color and joy and love and whimsy. And I'm a person who just really prioritizes living romantically and romanticizing my life because it's, you know, that's a fun way to live and it's better than being depressed, quite frankly. And I think that's just the best way to be. And I would never want to have another person there in my space or in my life. I can't fathom or picture what that would look like. And my life is honestly more full because of that. I have so many friends. I have my birthday this coming weekend and I was trying to figure out how many people I could, like, fit in my apartment for. And I was like, okay, so I have to invite about 40 people. My closest 40 friends, who are all people I get dinner with, like, on the reg. And it was genuinely a really hard choice to make. And I am still, like, fretting. So I'm like, oh, I've got, like, too many friends.
You're like, they're not making the cut.
I know. I'm like, ah, that's such a privilege to have so many friends. I grew up not having many when I was, like, younger. I got bullied severely. So now being at this place where I have so many friends, this abundance of love is just the most remarkable thing. And I think that pretty much every asexual person I know is just a part of this, just they all have those rich inner worlds and inner lives because they've had to build that. They're not relying on being a half of someone else's whole. They are the whole themselves. The whole, that sounded a bit dirty, but, you know, they are themselves a full unit and fully formed and fleshed out person. They have to get pretty comfortable and confident about being yourself.
Absolutely. I love that so much because I think that we do, and we've spoken about this before in the hookup, really, like, we do prioritize romantic love as, like, the be all and end all. And if we had a hierarchy, it's like, what's at the top? And it's like, yeah, there are so many different ways to access love and to experience love that are just as powerful, if not more, you know?
Exactly.
I would love to end this, Ellie, if you had any advice for people listening who want to find more ace communities. They might be listening, like, you might be their cash. Do you know what I mean?
I actually weirdly know I have been for some people. I do get messages pretty frequently.
I literally have no doubt that this will be...
Yeah, change their lives, which is so crazy. They're like, oh, I came across a video of yours and I broke up with my boyfriend today. I'm like, that okay. Is sorry, boyfriend.
I genuinely think this will be an episode that will do that for people. So if that is happening right now, what's your advice for, where to go next? Where can you find more community? Where you can find more access to info on this?
I think the best starting off place for anyone, asexual or not, is just reading Ace by Angela Chen. It is the most fantastic deep dive explanation into asexual history and bit of stuff about like biology and, you know, what asexuality is. It's honestly just that's at its core what asexuality, what aromanticism is and how that functions in society. I cannot recommend this book more highly. It is my must read. And then I would say meeting people online, although that sounds like such a crazy sentence, be like, oh, you meet strangers on the internet. But I've found so many friends through ACE communities online and engaging in media and like comment sections on YouTube videos, on TikToks, finding friends through that is a really beautiful way of doing it. And I think giving back to your community always because, you know, people in the queer community aren't often the nicest to asexual people. So I think that asexual people and aromantic people have really got to make their own community that has, you know, that isn't as intrinsically tied to the queer community at large because we're forgotten about and mistreated so frequently. So I think it's nice to be able to really foster community amongst all of us. And yeah, watch my videos, Extra Virgin on YouTube. I talk about asexuality too often, one might say.
Yes.
There's one.
We'll put all of that as well in the show notes for you so you can access that book as well, but also all of Ali's apps and socials and YouTube and everything. So this has been such a pleasure, Ali.
It's been a joy to yap with you. And I can't wait to yap when even further
I
when
know.
The mics are off.
Talk about more books. I love it.
<It's a dream. laughs>
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Angel.